Hi, you're listening to Radio Lux Lucid. I'm your host, Steve Matthews. The date today is Saturday, September the 10th, 2016. And this is episode number 9. And the title of today's episode is Immigration, Citizenship, and the Bible, an Overview. Now, you may be wondering why I'm calling it what I'm calling it. Why am I talking about immigration, citizenship, and the Bible, and why am I calling that an overview? If you read my blog, and I really hope you do read my blog, but if you read my blog, you may have noted that that was the title of last Sunday's article, the article that I published last Sunday. I guess that would have been on the September the 4th, was titled that, and Lord willing, that will be the first in a series of articles that I'm going to be writing on those subjects, the subjects of immigration, citizenship, and the Bible. And what I wanted to do with this episode is to just give you, the listener, a little bit of an overview as to what I'm going to be talking about as I work through that series. Right now, my plan is to make that a four-part series. I've written already the introductory post in that series, and I have three more planned. We'll see how that actually works out. It seems like a lot of times I end up becoming more long-winded than what I think, and I end up with more posts than what I initially thought. But we'll see what happens. Right now, the plan is to have four posts. And what I want to do is just, like I said, give you a little bit of an overview as to the flow the flow of the series, and also talk some about some of the main headline points that I'm going to be making throughout the series. Why don't we just get started with the introduction? I know I've already written that, but it never hurts to begin at the beginning here. So part one of Immigration, Citizenship, and the Bible is really an introduction to this series. One of the points that I think to keep in mind, of course, about immigration is that's a hotbed issue. It's a very emotional issue. You know, regardless of what side you're on, whether you're on the side that is, say, promoting unlimited immigration and the more the merrier, or if you're on the side of the restrictionists. Or maybe if you don't fall into either one of the camps. I mean, it's hard to discuss immigration without getting people's emotions up. Donald Trump has gotten, for instance, a lot of flack for a lot of things that he said over the past year or so while he's been running for president. But I don't think there's anything that has brought him as much criticism as his stated plan to temporarily ban all Muslims from entering the United States. I mean, that has just been a lightning rod for criticism for him. On the other hand, when you say talk about Hillary Clinton and her plan to grant amnesty to large numbers of people who have in the United States in violation of our current immigration laws, that also prompts a lot of heated passion from people who oppose that. So it's a very emotional issue. And one of the things that I hope to do in talking about immigration is I want to try to come at this from a biblical perspective, because as a Christian, as a scripturalist, that is, as someone who approaches the Bible from the standpoint using the system developed by Gordon Clark and the system developed by John Robbins, what we try to do as scripturalists is to try to bring the principle of sola scriptura to the field of politics. That's really the one of the main goals that I have in anything that I write on the blog. When I'm talking about politics, when I'm talking about economics, when I'm, regardless of what subject I'm talking about, those are all spiritual subjects. Politics is a spiritual subject. And that might sound strange to some people. I heard a sermon one time when the minister made some comment to the effect he sort of divided economics and spiritual matters, as though somehow economics and spiritual matters are separate from each other as far as the East is from the West. Well, I would contend that economics, that politics, are spiritual matters every bit as much as, say, studying the doctrine of salvation, studying the gospel, is a spiritual matter. Economics and politics, Christianity has a specific view on both of those topics, and they are derived from the whole counsel of God, as expressed in His Word. And so our goal as Christians, our goal as scripturalists, is to bring that idea of sola scriptura, the Bible alone, scripture alone, to the subject of politics. And of course, the issue of immigration certainly falls under that category. And I think it also does touch on some issues of economics as well. So we're going to be talking about politics and economics, but we're going to be talking about it ultimately, finding out what the Bible has to say on those subjects. But before we actually get to talking about what the Bible has to say on it, what I want to do is lay some groundwork first. The introductory installment that I wrote last week, again, I talk about the fact that it's a very emotional debate. And at the end of that particular piece, of the end of last week's post, I actually put up two propositions that ultimately are going to guide our discussion. And I believe both of these can be justified in the scriptures. And again, we're going to get into some detail on that. But here's the two principles, just from a very high level. The first principle of biblical immigration is that government should not be in the business of either hindering or subsidizing immigration. That implies a couple of things. It does imply free movement of people. But it also, for that to work, it also does require the end of the welfare state. The second proposition I talk about is really related to citizenship. I've titled this whole post, the series, immigration, citizenship in the Bible, because it's not just discussing about immigration or people moving, immigration or migration, or asylum seekers, people going from one country to another country. It's also about citizenship, because one of the things that gets discussed often in terms of immigration is citizenship. I mean, there's this whole drive, Hillary Clinton is certainly a big proponent of this, that all of these people who have come to the United States and are in the country in violation of our immigration laws, well, they should all just be granted amnesty. We should all just say, well, hey, you're here, you violated our law, yeah, we get that, but we're going to make you citizens anyway, and we're just going to wink at that, and everything's going to be all good. So citizenship really ties in very closely to the whole idea of immigration. So my first principle, the government should not hinder or subsidize immigration, really does just deal with that whole idea of the movement of people. But my second proposition is this, that citizenship should be determined based upon the Presbyterian model for determining membership in the visible church. Now, in Reformed circles, it's very common to talk about the invisible church on one hand and the visible church on the other hand. The invisible church is all of God's elect from all times, all places on earth. The visible church, like invisible versus visible, so the invisible church is all of God's elect. The visible church, on the other hand, and that's really what we're using as our model here, the membership in the visible church. We're going to take what the Presbyterian, the Westminster Standards have to say, and we're going to apply that to the nation state. And the Westminster Standards teach that there are two ways that someone becomes a member of the visible church. When you think of the visible church, think of a local congregation. You know, you go to a church building on a Sunday morning, you see the people there. Well, that's the visible church. Now, not all of those people that you see in a church on a Sunday morning, probably not all of them are elect. There are probably a lot of people in any average church, and I'm talking about evangelical, Bible-believing Christian churches on Sunday mornings, there are probably a significant percentage of people there who are not saved. They're not part of the invisible church, but they're there as part of the visible church, and they may even be members of the particular congregation. So how does one become a member of the visible church? Well, according to the Westminster Standards, there are two ways to become a member of a church. Number one, if you're an adult, to give a credible profession of faith in Christ. Number two, on the other hand, if someone is a child, an infant, or a child under his parents' care, that child becomes a member of the visible church when either one or both parents have made a profession of faith. So the visible church consists not only of all professing adults, but also their children as well. And we're going to explore that in some detail. I think it's a really fascinating point to discuss how that would actually apply to the subject of citizenship and how that relates to immigration. We're going to talk about that, but I'm just going to leave it. There may be some questions right now that you have, but we're just going to leave that lying there for right now. So that's basically my a summary of my my first post from last week on immigration. You know, the main points, the government should, you know, that immigration is a highly emotional issue, and we're going to have two guiding principles on how to answer the question of immigration and citizenship. Number one, that government should not hinder or subsidize immigration. And number two, we're going to use the Presbyterian model for membership in the visible church and apply that to citizenship in the nation state. Moving on to my second installment, and Lord willing, I hope to get this up on the blog tomorrow on Sunday, it's going to be dealing with the Roman Catholic Church and immigration. I don't think it's really appreciated enough how much of the current problem with immigration in the United States, and also in the European Union for that matter, really is the fault of the Roman Catholic Church state. The Roman church state has created all kinds of problems with immigration, and it's done so intentionally. It's not an accident on their part. It's something that's done to promote its own interests. Basically, there are three ways that Rome causes immigration problems. Number one, in countries where it holds sway, Rome creates economic and political chaos such that people that live in those countries want to get out. I mean, if you look, for instance, in Central America and South America, you know, why does everybody want to leave those countries and come to the United States? You know, the Roman Catholic Church has held sway, has been the leading institution in those countries for 500 years. And the political situation in many of those countries, the economic situation in many of those countries, is a mess. Is there any possibility that maybe those problems can be traced back to the Roman church state? I believe that they can be. And Rome bears responsibility for creating a mess in the countries where it is the leading institution. A second way that Rome creates problems, immigration, has to do with creating the welfare state in countries, especially countries, nations that were heavily influenced by the Reformation. I'm talking about here about Northern Europe and also North America, and particularly the United States. The welfare state in the United States, since I know about that more since I live here, is substantially the product of the Roman Church and lobbyists for the Roman Romanist lobbyists. And thinkers have substantially created the current welfare state model that we have. So that creates a pull. You know, they create a push by making a mess out of the countries in which they have in which Rome is a dominant position, and then they, on the other hand, they create this pull factor for migrants and immigrants by creating a welfare state in the wealthy countries. And finally, a third leg of the way that Rome creates, fosters problems of immigration and migration is that they encourage migration. They actually aid and abet members from or individuals from sending countries to violate the laws, the immigration laws of the United States. And they openly boast about this. It's quite remarkable. And of course, in the end, too, is we would ask ourselves, well, what's their motivation for doing this? The short answer is that they seek to break down sometimes what's called the Westphalian order, Rome does, and actually reinstitute world government. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that tomorrow, Lord willing, in the blog post. Roman immigration and how Rome creates problems of immigration. In the third installment, and this is something that I would plan for September the 18th release, Sunday, September the 18th, I'm going to take a look at the immigration positions of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Of course, Trump is the Republican nominee for president here in 2016, and Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nominee. And we're going to take a look at some of their words and some of the proposals that they have as far as immigration goes. And we're going to compare and contrast those. And then the fourth installment, and this is the what I have planned for Sunday, the 25th of September, I intend to talk about the Bible and immigration and citizenship. And what we're going to do is we're going to dig into those initial propositions that I made in the first installment. We're going to take a look at where we find scriptural support for those ideas. And we're going to talk about what the Bible has to say, and maybe use what the Bible has to say and go back and refute some of the things that are being put forth by Rome and some of the things that are being said by politicians as well, and sum up. So that'll be the fourth installment. That'll be the most biblical-centered of the four installments. So that's kind of the plan for the work. I'm really excited about doing this. I've wanted to write about immigration for many years. I think it's a fascinating topic. It's certainly a very timely topic. I think it's certainly a topic that's on everyone's mind. I know that many people in America are certainly concerned about the immigration question. I know many people in Europe are concerned about the immigration question, and they should be. This is a very important topic. You know, one of the things, of course, with immigration is it's not something that's easily undone. In fact, it may even be impossible to undo. You know, you think about, for example, the Old Testament account of when the Israelites went into Canaan and they were going on their conquests under Joshua, and there was that group, I believe it was the Gibeonites, you know, they apparently perhaps were aware that that Israel was had been commanded to essentially exterminate all of the nations in Canaan, but they tricked the Israelites, they actually, you know, lived among the children of Israel for many centuries. The Israelites also failed to drive out many of the Canaanites. And the, you know, the scriptures tell us that those Canaanite nations, the remnants of them, became thorns to them, became snares and traps to them. And so, you know, when we talk about immigration, when we talk about bringing in people from other parts of the world, especially from other parts of the world that you might call non-traditional sources, non-European sources of immigration to the United States. I mean, we have to ask ourselves, what kind of potential does this have for our country going forward? Those are fair questions to ask. And I believe that the Bible provides those answers. In short, I believe that immigration should be open. But on the other hand, I believe that those people who come to the United States ought to be committed to being Americans and not, seek to upend our country, but rather to live as Americans. And I don't think that that's being unreasonable. So anyway, we're going to explore some of these questions, and I think this will be a really fascinating study. Lord willing, I truly hope that it is a biblical-based study, and I think it's something that should be encouraging to those of us who are Christians, regardless of whether we're native-born Americans or maybe we're people who've recently arrived in the country. I think that this should be beneficial. So I look forward to doing it. I look forward to writing this series and, of course, answering any questions that you may have about it. So thanks for listening in. I really do appreciate that. And until next week, I will talk to you then.